Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Living Astrology with Janet Hickox. Grab your cup of coffee or your tea, sit back, and let's chat about what is going on in the sky above us. Today is a very irritable sort of day. It's the crankiest, one of the crankiest 2 days of the week, today and tomorrow. And boy, did my day start off not particularly cranky, but I feel like I am totally in mama bear mode. And I do not know what to do about what I'm feeling, except to move through it. And so I'm going to get on my soapbox here for a minute because I am fuming. My daughter yesterday discovered that she had been working closely with someone who had tested positive for coronavirus, and that his test took about a week to come back. And while he had gone between the time he got tested and yesterday when they found out it was positive, he had been working right next to her, with her, side by side. I can't even believe the consciousness of a workplace that would allow someone who's been tested, because right now they're not testing you unless they really believe you are going to be positive, and let him come and expose himself in the workplace, which happens to be a healthcare facility, to not only other workers, healthcare workers, but now to patients as well. This morning, consequently, my daughter woke up with symptoms of coronavirus. And now she's going to have to be tested as she has been so closely exposed. And herein lies the whole craziness of what is happening right now. First of all, we don't have enough tests, and so they're not testing at people. And then why in the bleep in a country such as this one does it take 7 days, seven full days, for someone's coronavirus test to come back? A, you know they're in the healthcare field, and B, why? Just why? And how many people has that person exposed in the meantime? And what is in the minds of the people who are the bosses, the people who are the managers of this medical field, that they would allow this to happen? It is insane. It is insane, it is short-sighted, it is stupid, and I can't help but believe that a part of that is driven by the powers that be in this country who seem to poo-poo the reality of what is happening. Okay, off of the soapbox. But it exposes a huge gap in what is happening in the healthcare field. We need our healthcare workers right now to be healthy. And yes, some of them are going to get sick naturally, right? That happens. It's not that makes me so irritated. It's that they knew this person was likely going to test positive for it, and they let him come back to work. And then even after he tested positive, they let him come back to work. Are you bleeping kidding me? I just can't even believe it. And if that's happening here, and then you multiply that out by the numbers of medical practices throughout the country, even now, I'm in Washington. This is a state that has recognized the problem from the very beginning and has taken steps, profound steps at times, to curb this virus. What about in states where there are more laissez-faire sort of governors who aren't doing much about it at all, who don't believe that there is a problem? How far is this spreading while these people continue with their freaking heads in the sand, believing that this is all a Democrat's creation? Oh my God, this is so annoying, right? This is like turn the corner from minor annoyance to big, bad, scary issues. But because we know what this is all about here in Living Astrology, I'm not going into the fear of all of this. My daughter is young, her family is young, and they are relatively healthy. On any given day, they should be able to move through this easily. But there are other members of the health community who have children at home with compromised immune systems, or who have elderly parents that maybe they have been in contact with over time that they didn't know they'd been exposed. So here is a big, bad problem that needs to be addressed. Stay home. If you can stay home, stay home. If you're even thinking you're sick, stay home. Don't go to work. Don't let your workplace pressure you into feeling bad because you're taking a day off. Don't let them do it. And that's what happened here. The bosses in the workplace basically pressuring the employees to come to work because, let's face it, the healthcare is needing people, right? They need their people, but you don't need sick people infecting sick people. Craziness. So here's what's funny about this. I knew that today this was going to be an interesting conversation for us to have this morning because there's so much going on now with the moon getting to the later degrees of Aries. And in the later degrees of Aries, of course, that brings the moon, our emotions, into contact with those planets in Capricorn that are all responsible for the breakdown of our societies, right? For our structures, for exposing the weaknesses in all of our institutions. So it's almost just too funny that astrology always can show us what the bleep is going on. And here we have it, right? I wrote this morning before I even knew this, that this was going to be one of the crankiest 2 days of the week. I knew that going in this morning because, of course, that the planet Jupiter and Pluto were both going to be squared by the moon's transit. Now, if we try to break that down a bit, what we see is that Jupiter brings optimism and generosity, but magnification. It makes things bigger. It makes problems bigger. And then the alter ego of this particular transit is that of being smugly self-righteous and having an attitude of that kind of overt or maybe covert smugness that other people pick up. And and you'll know which, by the way, the people around you are behaving, right, towards you. So it's one of those days where we may be like me this morning. I want to get on that soapbox. I just want to go get in their faces and I want to shake them and I want to say, you knew better, you know better. What the bleep are you thinking? And I don't know what to say, right? I don't know what to say. So hold on here. I need to do something very quickly. And then I have a guest that is coming on this morning. She's going to talk to us a bit about, there we go. Okay. That's done. All right. So we have a guest coming on here about 8:30 this morning. She's an expert in relationships. And she's going to be talking to us about some of the things that she has going on, some free webinars that are free conversations that she's having this Friday or every Friday, I think, for the next few weeks. So more on that here in a few minutes. The other thing going on today is the moon is in a square to Pluto. Pluto, as you know, is the planet of death and destruction, transformation. He is the energy that prompts us to move through these dark times and the dark nights of the soul personally, and for us to move through that and into a new reality. So sometimes when the moon is in a position to square Pluto, we end up with compulsive behavior, with emotions that have the momentum to create havoc in our lives, to create chaos. And by the way, suppressing those emotions, if you're feeling them, will only lead to more volatility. So they have to be expressed. Now, there are healthy ways to express them, right? There we can, you know, we can in the safety of a conversation with somebody vent. We can in the safety of a conversation with someone talk about what we're feeling. But what we don't want to do is react, right? And then create a havoc within your relationships with other people. So, but suppression, no, but reaction also not so positive. But if you can choose to deal with the emotional energy that you're feeling, work it through, right? Don't be afraid to work it through. This is a great time. Today's a great day. Excuse me, for self-analysis, right? For going within, for digging deep into your subconscious patterns, for digging deep into the causes, the root causes of your problems or your fears or your insecurities. Now, this is not necessarily work that is for the faint of heart. This is requiring openness on your part, a forgiveness on your part, a compassion on your part for yourself and for anyone else that is involved in that process for you. And by the way, this isn't where you just go up to someone who you've had a problem with and you just start that process with them. No, right? That doesn't work. This is your issue, right? So you have to deal with your own process in this. So if another person happens to be a part of that process and their game to work with this, then that's a different story. But that begins with an invitation, right? We talked about invitations yesterday to share your constructive criticisms or to share your opinions. So this isn't a day where you just grab that spouse that's been irritating you or that friend that's been irritating you and tell them all of the your deepest, darkest angers and angst and insecurities about it. You have to do that with someone by agreement. On the other hand, you do that work with yourself, either through journaling or through meditation or through exercise or some other way where you can work this through. There's a lot of power in our being able to work through all of this today. But that's also why this makes this day and tomorrow kind of a cranky day, right? Who really wants to get into those emotions, right? But if we do, then we come out so much cleaner. There's a purifying effect going on right now over these 2 days that will allow us to, you know, release some more of the things that are no longer serving us, but also to engender new ways of being with ourselves. Emotional power struggles, I would also expect that to pop up somewhere today. And those struggles may be grounded in manipulation and guilt and jealousy and all of those very, very powerful, yet underbelly sides of energies, right? The more negative energies. But we also have the opportunity here to recognize when that's happening and withdraw our energy from the power struggle. We don't have to have the power struggle. It just happens to be what's favored energetically. But as soon as you recognize that you might be headed into a power struggle, it's a great time to go, wow, okay, let me draw this back in toward myself. Let me clean up my own backyard, so to speak, or my own front yard here, and then move through this, right, with an invitation to come out purified, clean, released, happier, more joyful, right? Now, just for fun and grins, we also have the moon coming into a conjunction today with the planet Eris, the goddess of discord. So discord is amplified, right? And the emotional response to that discord is amplified. And that amplifies the rhetoric, that amplifies the people, that the reaction from people, that amplifies our self-sabotaging natures. And it also amplifies the separatist, racist, bigotry type energies that are out there. Because remember, this is a goddess who was not included in something, and she reacted with anger and spite to the people and revenge to the people who did not include her. So this is a cautionary tale for us right now to remember that even if like my anger, my tirade this morning about the healthcare industry and what's happening, is to understand that most times people are doing their best, right? They're doing the best they can with what they've got in the situation that they find themselves in. We may not like it. It may not be right. It may be unconscionable, but mostly people are out there doing their best. So it isn't appropriate to start labeling people or to label a race like the Chinese as culpable for creating this virus, right? There's a lot of that kind of madness and psychosis that's going on. And we all kind of get drawn into it through the news, through all the different things that are happening that appear to be scary out there. So Eris, the goddess of discord, meeting up with the moon, you know, ruling our emotions. There may be a lot of emotional overreactions, a lot of emotional reactions out there today, but we know better. We know how to respond and not react. Even though I vented earlier. Venting is not, by the way, well, never mind. Anyway, also today, oh, there's Sadie. Good morning, Sadie. She likes to get on my bed. So today also we are dealing with a sun in a conjunction to Chiron. And we've spoken about this about the last couple of days, because in the new moon, the sun and Chiron were already very close together. And here we have the life lessons that are coming up to the surface, right? The life lessons, some of you may be close to 50 years old and your life lessons are coming to a head with the Chiron return. Some of you are much younger and this isn't a part of your particular Chiron, but because you're part of the collective, you are also learning about what your insecurities are. What are your fears? It's like they're right up in our faces right now as we move through our lives. And the sun and meeting with Chiron also adds healing and the healing potential to those insecurities and to those fears that we're experiencing, should we choose to address them. Right? If you choose not to, well, that's your prerogative, right? That is your free will. But then you're just sort of elongating the time in which in your life that these lessons are going to keep reappearing, right? And coming back at you, right? What we resist persists. So don't make it something that you keep wanting to push away or not look at. Embrace it, right? And then facing these very fears and these very insecurities lead us to healing. And lead us to that energy of interdependence, which is what we're also looking for with the sun, or excuse me, with Chiron in Aries over the course of the next 6 years. And on one end, remember, we have independence, right? That is the far side of to one side, and the other side is codependence. But what we're really aiming for isn't all of us being independent. But it's the, and there's nothing wrong with being independent. We certainly don't want to be codependent, but you know, ideally there's nothing wrong with either end, except it's a little more extreme expression. But what we really want to come to as we approach this age of Aquarius more fully is that we are all interdependent upon one another. Right? We see that clearly right now. When a healthcare worker gets sick and stays at work, infecting not only other employees, but other patients, and then the power structure allowing for that to happen, what we see then is the fault of not recognizing how interdependent all of the pieces are on that chessboard and the ramifications as it boils out, because one of the things that we're now going to be learning about, remember yesterday we talked about the nodes shifting out of the south node of the love of self, where we are self-obsessed and overly individuated, to the gate 15, which is the gate of the love of humanity, which is where we are more concerned about how we are all working together. How are we all together in this little blue planet called Earth? So we are working through that both at the individual level as we face our fears and our insecurities, but also on the collective level as we redefine what it means to be interdependent. So I find it to be a very interesting energy that is popping up. I'm going to head over to Facebook really quickly. I haven't checked in yet this morning with anybody. And let's see here. It takes so much time anymore for Facebook to load up. I don't get what's going on there. Okay. Good morning, Asa. Great to see you this morning. Amy Moore, good morning. Val Jocelyn, good morning. And Stephanie Compton, good morning. I'm not sure if you're in Australia or if you're here in the USA, but either way, it's great to see you out there. And hopefully everybody's doing well this morning and is faring well with the various ways that our wings have been clipped, it seems. So over time, I'm sure we are doing exactly what we need to. Now, this morning, I wanted to move into another kind of teaching, if you will. We've talked a lot about the Pleiadian Earth energy. Every day I bring that to you because I'm really fascinated by it. But there is also an emphasis in the Pleiadian Earth energy, in the calendar and in the astrology, on the planet Venus. Well, it just so happens, if you have the calendar... let me see if I can get my calendar out and show you. If you have the Pleiadian Earth Energy calendar, by the way, for those of you who are new to the show and haven't seen us talk about this, hi, Rebecca, I'll bring you in here in just a minute. What we see here is the Pleiadian Earth Energy calendar. And if you go to the month of March, you will see that today there is a yellow star right here up in the upper corner. If you look down at the bottom here, it will tell you that it is a new Venus cycle that we're into, right? A new Venus cycle, and the Venus cycle's name is, or the phase is, wholeness. And in that particular phase, of Venus, there is a time here for us to prepare for the coming retrograde cycle. So, you know, Venus turns retrograde not until May, but she's actually moving through the retrograde cycle starting in April. And here is that harbinger of what's to come. She spends 50 days complete in this particular phase. She is at her highest and her brightest in the night sky. So when you go outside at night and you're like, I wonder what that bright star is. For me, it's over in the southwest. It is the planet Venus, right? And at this point, she is in that brightest of her evening star phase. She is the furthest from the sun as seen from the earth. And that's why she appears so bright, right? She's not being dimmed. Her light isn't being dimmed by the glare of the sun. So what we see here on Earth is her in her full regalia, bright as can be, beautiful. And this is where she begins to slow down to prepare for her retrograde phase. Now, all of us were born in a specific Venus phase. I happened to be born when Venus was the morning star. She was very early in, she had reached her greatest, her maximum elongation from the sun in the morning star phase when I was born. And that has a specific meaning to me as my birth phase. Now, if you were born with this as your birth phase, then this is very important for you because this is mimicking what was going on when you were born. But there are also collective themes that come up with Venus in this particular phase. And I went as far as looking up what they were in the human design, what the gates were that Venus was in, and looking at what then the energy of the collective would look like over this next 50 days. And by the way, part of this is coming from Adam Gainsburg's book, say that 10 times fast, called The Light of Venus. Embracing Your Deepest Feminine, Empowering Our Shared Future. This is an awesome book. Now, I know a lot of this particular book is a little bit deeper than maybe some of the other books that I recommend people to read. But if you take it slow and you ask questions of yourself or reach out and ask your favorite astrologer questions, you might be able to understand this quite nicely. And what he goes on to share in this book is that in this particular phase, that we are crystallizing our collective energy around the feminine. So we know that we have been in a phase where all of these goddess energies are rising and coming to a point of balance. That's where we're reaching for, is the point of balance with the divine masculine. But here's where we're really crystallizing our collective ideas around the feminine energy. And as this is Venus, we are radiating out the collective values. What are our values? And those are being tested right now like never before, right? It's really coming home to us that we've been living outside of the true nature of our values, or that somehow our values have gotten skewed away from caring for one another, and instead the more greed-oriented nature of the collective has been. So we have an opportunity now to reevaluate where we are in all of that, and how do we move back to our common values? Then we are also, this is a time about manifesting our feminine destiny. Many of us, we think, you know, that this isn't a man and woman thing, by the way. This is really about our relationship with these great energies, with the energy of the masculine and the energy of the feminine, which, by the way, we all carry both energies. And our life as a duality, right? This earthly life is all about duality. We have to learn how to embrace both and make ourselves whole in that energy. So we have that. This is about redefining our social identity. It's funny because I was having a quick text conversation with someone this morning. She snapped me a picture of her son, who I think is 6 years old, sitting at a desk at home online in with his schoolmates, right? Doing a lesson in math this morning. So we have this new definition of our social identity, kids at home embracing schoolwork via home. I don't know what that means for our future, but certainly it is redefining our social identity, as is this idea of self-quarantine or social distancing, right? These new buzzwords, social distancing. And what is that? Well, it's a new definition of a social identity. And I don't know where that leads us. I wish I did, but we are, you know, this is crystallizing now in our consciousness as we move forward. And the gate 23 in your human design is where this planet Venus is sitting. And because she's slowing down, she's spending more time there at this gate. And this gate is the gift of simplicity. It takes us from on the pathway from complex, the complex nature of our social structures to the more simple, simplified, and then eventually leading us into what was that highest energy here is quintessence, right? Getting to the quintessence. I love that word. Quintessence, the ultimate essence of something, the ultimate essence of who we are, the ultimate essence of our collective identity. And this is all about maturing our relationships and the maturing of our relationships and how that is done by working on our own shadows. And I'm telling you, I couldn't make a better segue to introducing you to my guest here. Let me go over and introduce you guys to, I'm going to ask you to start your video, Rebecca, so everybody can see you. There she is. Good morning to Rebecca. Everybody meet Rebecca Eigens. She is an astrologer. Her primary focus is on the psychology of relationships, the shadow dance of, here's her book. I've got your book sitting right here. The Shadow Dance and the Astrological Seventh House, Marriage, Partnership, and Open Enemies. And that means the shadow in us all. Welcome, Rebecca. It's great to see you in person.
Thank you.
So I invited you here this morning because I know that you've been working on a series of talks or conversations, I believe you call them. And I want you to tell people about these conversations, how they can connect with you, and what the subject matter is.
Okay. Well, actually, I just started last week, so it was the first one, and it's called Shadow Work Discussions. It's going to be on my page, Astrology, Shadow, and Seventh House. And what I'm going to do is speak for 15 minutes about the shadow, one part of the conversation. And then I would really like for everybody to join in and discuss the subject, to talk about how that's being applied to their life.
Hey, sorry, Rebecca, can you say the name of that page again? Because I'm typing it in for the listeners. Astrology. Yeah.
Okay, it's Astrology, Shadow, and Seventh House.
That's what I thought.
That's my page. And what we're going to be doing is just me speaking for 15 minutes about just taking a subject from my workbook and then talking about it. What I would like is for people to jump in and share stories of how this affects them, what they think about it, because if you work with your unconscious will work with you. So it's in journaling and asking yourself questions. What does this mean? Why did that person come into my life right now? Why is this repeating for me? And how can I look at that myself? How can I look at myself as part of this dance, which I call the shadow dance? And so that's what I'm going to be doing. And we just started last week. This Friday will be the second week. I'm excited about doing it again. I did some live series last year and I was real uncomfortable because I wasn't used to talking into a computer by myself. You know, I'm used to leading workshops. You know, I don't have the gift, the Gemini gift that she has, which is fabulous. I mean, you really do. You have so much information coming in constantly. It's awesome to listen to you, really.
Thank you. But you're also awesome because you have so much connection to the psychology, to Jungian psychology. And, you know, tell people about your background because you've studied that material for, what, 30 years, 20 years, yeah, something like that.
Yes, my background is studying Jung at the Jung Center here in Houston for 30 years with Pittman McGeehee, who was an Episcopalian priest when I met him, and he became a Jungian analyst. So I took many courses with him. And in fact, starting this Sunday, since we are all at home, I'm starting another community live online thing, which is Jungian Church at Home from your computer. And I will be playing a CD of Pittman McGeehee, my teacher and mentor for 30 years, 30 minutes of him speaking, and these talks that I was given. The Young Center gave me 100 CDs of his talks. And so I'm going to share them with everyone all over the world. Anybody can join and listen to him for 30 minutes. And then I've left an hour and a half for us to talk about what he said. How can we apply that to our lives? Because he is brilliant and he's so funny. He's not only deep, he's funny. So it's really awesome. So I have two things going on. The shadow work discussions with me. Mm-hmm. And then also the seventh house, which is my passion, is showing people what's in their seventh house. Because the seventh house, if you will, you know, look at my book, the cover, it's our shadow. And we have to bring our shadow in front so we can see it. And the best way to do that in astrology is through your seventh house, through your Venus, through the ruler of your seventh house, and the aspects that your Venus is making. So understanding all of that is what I have specialized in.
Yes.
And love it, because it really, really works. I mean, you will know if you understand your own astrology, you will start to integrate what she's talking about, your masculine or your feminine if you're a man. You have to integrate both sides to move into the Aquarian age, to me. That is what we're all being asked of. Because nobody can carry our projection. You know, the beginning of relationships start with projection. You'll know it's a projection because there's a fascination and a compulsion.
So Pluto-like.
If you're compulsively drawn to somebody, if you're obsessed, if you can't even go through your day without thinking about them 24 hours a day, you're fascinated. And it's an inflation. In Jungian psychology, that would be an inflation. And that inflation is trying to pull you in to that person, but it isn't about them. It's about you.
Right, right. That's the key here, right? Is that these are projections of your own shadows or your own insecurities that you blame or project outward from you to other people.
Yes. And you can fall madly in love. You know, like I ask people, have you ever met anyone you can't stand? Raise your hand. And have you ever fallen madly in love? Say hello to your shadow. Because that is yourself that you're seeing, but the unconscious has to project itself out. That's the only way that we can get to know who we are. But nobody can carry that projection for very long. I mean, Pittman McGeehee, my teacher that I'm going to start playing, yeah, he said, if you want the projections to fall off, marry the person.
Now, I got a question. So for those people out there who are not familiar with who Pittman McGeehee is, you said he was an Episcopalian.
He was an Episcopalian priest and the dean at Christ Church Cathedral in Houston for 10 years. And then he became a Jungian analyst.
Gotcha.
Full time. And he taught at the Jung Center here. I studied with him 30 years. And he retired and has moved to Austin to be with his grandchildren. And he's still teaching. He's out there teaching. So I recently contacted him and I said, your website is not up to date. I volunteer to get you up to date because his teachings are so profound. I mean, I can't begin to tell you what I learned from this man.
Now, tell us about you said 102 CDs.
100.
Or 100 talks or something like that.
I mean, I don't know that there's actually 100, but there's a whole stack of them, like, in sleeves of six. So yes, I have.
Give us the gist of what he covers. I mean, what are some of the things that people might hear in what he talks about? Just kind of a broad look.
A very broad look would be him. Oh, my phone. Let me turn it off. A very broad look would be that he is a priest. Okay. So he is bringing in Christianity, but he's blending in Jungian psychology with it. So it's almost Christianity from a Jungian perspective. And one of the books that I would refer you to by him is called The Invisible Church, where he helps you to understand that God is you, that we are part of God, that God is inside of us, and that we are evolving God. It's very deep.
Wow.
It's like every part of everything Jungian is about how we are the incarnation of Christ. We are that incarnation and we are evolving the God image. He calls it the God image because we don't really, it's the mystery of God. We don't really know. Nobody can really know. People can have religions, all man-made religions, but it, essentially we're all going to come to one inside of us and that oneness that we all understand as Neptune.
Yeah. To know oneself is to know God.
Yes.
And to understand oneself is to understand God.
But what I loved about him was he was a master storyteller. So he would tell a story about his own personal life, and then he'd weave in Christianity or Jungian psychology. But again, Christianity from a mystical perspective, which is an experiential perspective. I think of a mystic as somebody who is experiencing these things, not somebody who believes something.
Right.
And so I learned all of this from him, and literally he changed my life. And so I can't begin to tell you how good he is and how funny he is and how interesting. You walk away like, wow, what did he say? And you start thinking about it. So I'm going to record all of these and then we can, you can always go back. And I did a website for him. It's Pittman McGeehee, MCGEHEE.com, and created a podcast. So I've started listening to these CDs and then adding them onto the podcast as well. So for a flavor of it, go to his website, listen to the very first one that I heard, which was Releasing Shadow Figures. That was the very first one that I heard. And that is what brought me in to meet him. And I asked his birthday. And just from the stories that I was listening to, because I was listening to cassettes, a friend of mine had been giving me cassettes about him that I would listen to. And just from listening to his cassettes, I guessed his birth time and I was off by 15 minutes.
Wow. What is he? What sign?
He's a 12th house Virgo.
Oh, wow. Wow. I don't think I would have guessed that, but then I haven't listened to him.
But you'd have to hear all his stories. And then you would, I mean, like I heard like five or six. And just from that, I knew he couldn't, you know, I actually thought it was Scorpio rising, but it wasn't. It was Libra rising, but it was like, it was pretty interesting. I knew he was a 12th houser.
As am I. But a 12th house Gemini.
I know. He's a 12th house Virgo with Mercury and Libra.
A fellow Mercury driven sign, though. That's kind of fun.
With Mercury conjunct in Libra. So he's really brilliant. And the funny part, and the reason I thought he was so funny and how I could put where I put what I did is he has Jupiter and Pluto in Leo in the 10th house. So he is an entertainer, but he's introverted. He can entertain like amazing, but then he withdraws and goes into his introversion and he leaves the room like right away, right after a class. And you're like, wow.
He just walks out. He says goodbye
to a few people, but he's on his way and he doesn't hang around to chit chat with anybody. He's gone.
That cracks me up because I once went to an Eckhart Tolle talk in Seattle and there had to have been 2,000 people in this huge auditorium. And a woman comes out and asks us all to be quiet. And, you know, I mean, she did it nicely. She said, you know, we prefer to have silence. And so we're all sitting there quietly. Out walks Eckhart Tolle to absolute silence. And he just stands there, doesn't say anything. 5 minutes, maybe 6 minutes. I mean, to the point where you're starting to get uncomfortable, like, oh my God, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And then he just starts talking, like not even blinking an eye, just, you know, not even addressing the silence. Just starts talking. It was the best thing ever, but an interesting then commonality to, you know, what you're saying. He just walks off. Eckhart Tolle just walked in.
Well, they're completely different.
I want to find out a little more about what Fridays, you said this will be on Friday, right? On Fridays at what time?
That's on Sunday. This is Jungian Church at Home.
Oh, it's on Sunday.
Jungian Church at Home from your computer at 1:15 Central Standard Time, and that is from 1:15 to 3:15. And then my my group discussions will be about the shadow, and my discussions are on Fridays at 12 noon Central Standard Time for 45 minutes discussion, 15 minutes me speaking. I'm only going to speak for 15 minutes, and then I would like people to start coming and asking me questions, and, you know, go watch the video on my homepage, shadowdance.com. Does that bring up anything for you? Bring your stories. Let's talk about this, because this is the most important thing that we are doing. I really believe this. Jung felt that owning our shadow was essential. We can't even get to the male and female really till we own our shadow, because we're going to put our shadow on our partner. So we have to do that first before we can actually really embrace our masculine and feminine completely and know our anima and animus, what Jung called our anima and animus, which is male and female contrasexual images within the psyche of all of us. And so it is like the shadow is the first step into the unconscious.
Very cool. And so those of you who are listening to us this morning, the seventh house is the place in our chart where we see relationships. It is the crossing over point from the learning through the first six houses of self and how we entertain our families or our children or our connection to our work colleagues. And then it shifts then into the higher order of relationships. The seventh house, primarily a house of marriage or close relationships. And because it is the house that opposes the first house, it is the place where we project ourselves from the first house out onto other people, which is why it's so important to do the work.
Can I show you one diagram before you go off to start keep doing your, let me share my screen. All right, so here's your chart.
This is
the first house is 180 degrees opposite the seventh house. So our first house is our persona. It's our mask. It's our self-image, even our physical body and appearance, how we dress. But the seventh house is the marriage house. Our partners, whether it's business partners or any kind of partner, projections upon others. And notice in the middle there, open enemies. Mm-hmm. The ancients called the seventh house our house of open enemies because our partner has to become our enemy when we refuse to integrate that seventh house energy. So it is so important to shadow work. We can't even become a good partner without it. So I'll stop share, but please join me.
I want you to say that again. I want you to say that part about the open enemies and how your partner becomes...
Your partner has to become your enemy out in the open. You have to see that outside before you can integrate it. You have to project it. It's never, you know, oh, we fall madly in love and it's going to be happily ever after. No, it is actually a process of what he called individuation, what Carl Jung called individuation. Our partners are the mirrors. We can't become ourselves without that person. And so what Pittman says is I alone must become myself, but I cannot become myself alone. But in order for that partner to not be our open enemy, we have to integrate that. We have to learn how to share that in an equal and harmonious way with another person. But the very first part of it, like I said, is owning your shadow. So my workshop, I'm working on a webinar, but my book is a workshop in itself.
It's actually a workbook. I mean, there's, you know.
It is actually a workbook. You have places to write and you have places to write. And there's questions and processes at the end of the first two chapters for you to go through. I would like to create, and I'm working on it through the suggestion of my friend here on Teachable, an interactive webinar to teach my workbook and have it live where people can come to that and take that workshop and do it as an individual.
Perfect.
With all the more stuff I've learned since I wrote the book. I mean, there's so much more. It's really profound how you just keep going. It's so interesting. There's so much.
Yes, indeed. And so I want you to give us an example, if you will, if you can.
Absolutely.
Of what kind of projections we have. So people, because, you know, relationships are huge in our lives, obviously. Okay. They have very important meanings to us, whether we are recognizing that or not. But let's say you're in a relationship and you're having some kind of difficulty.
All right. I will give you an example of my own.
Perfect.
And this is a relationship that wasn't a marriage partnership. It was actually a business partnership, a person who was working with us. And his name was Richard. I mean, Richard has passed. So, but Richard would left Houston when we all got into computers in the 80s and had to start doing graphic design. I am a graphic designer and web designer. So as we were doing all this stuff on computer, he took off to Florida to go live on the beach. Well, he couldn't make any money there. So he came back to Houston, but now we were all up to speed and he wasn't. So I had three computers and I had a good graphic design business going, and he was a good friend. We'd known each other since we were in our 20s. And so this was around 40, 45 when I'd been learning all this from Pittman, and he was working with us on a regular basis. And I would give him an assignment and I would, cause he was a really good illustrator, and I gave him books on Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator and, you know, InDesign. And I had how-to books and I had computers. So I said, I'll answer your questions. Teach yourself. Here's the how-to books. Teach yourself. And he did. He did really well. And after about a year, I started giving him projects to do. We started working together. And I would give him work to do and he would do it wrong. And I would just, I'd be in a hurry. I'm a real business person. And I'd be in a hurry and I would fix it. I would fix whatever and I would go on. But it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I was getting more and more and more irritated with him because I would explain it. I would say, Richard, will you please write this down? Here's what I need you to do. And he would do it wrong. I was livid. So I got to this place where one day he walked in and I said, I don't want to work with you anymore. I don't want to work with you anymore. I've tried to explain what I need you to do. I've, you know, demonstrated, and, you know, I pulled Trish in there. She was my business partner. And I said, see, he's done it wrong again. And I just can't keep doing this. And I ask him to redo it sometimes, but a lot of the times I do it myself, you know,
so faster.
That was my own fault, you know, but at any rate, he left that day. He felt really bad. And I felt really bad too, because we've been friends since we were in our 20s, you know, I loved him. But I was tired of it. You know how we get indignant and we justify what we're angry about. It's their fault and it's not our fault. You know, look, it's clear. He's the one doing it wrong, right? I'm explaining. So I justified my behavior. Well, the next day, one of my Macs was having trouble coming up. And I called my friend Patrick, who was my Mac tech at the time. And I said, Patrick, the CI is not coming up and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, okay, Rebecca, I'm going to tell you, but this time, would you please write it down? That happened the next day. I had goosebumps all over me and I went, oh my God, you're perfect and he's not. I called him and I said, Richard, would you please come over? I think we need to handle this in a different way. I'm sorry for what happened yesterday and I want to sit down and talk about it. And he said, yes. And he came over and I said, I have been projecting my chaotic imperfection, not following directions, all those things that I kept seeing in you, I do those too. But I could only see it in you because it was in me.
Yeah. Doesn't that just go crazy?
I will never forget these experiences with shadow work because the feeling of repulsion that I felt for him was huge and it was gone. The forgiveness was real because I took it back. That is why you have to do this work. It's hard. This is not easy. But the universe was conspiring with me. Okay, you're going to teach this class? Really? Then you're going to learn it. And we're going to put things in your face until you do.
It's the walk your talk, right?
Yes. So there, that's one. Story. That's just one. I have a lot of them in my book. Yes. That of my own, but I also recorded my talks. I taught for 20 years. So I would record every class I would teach. And my son was in his 20s. One day he was outside on the deck with his friends and he said, "Mom, I'm trying to explain the shadow to them, but would you please come out here? Because you do it so much better than I do and I wish you would write a book." And these were 25-year-olds. Experiencing repeating patterns in relationships. They had started at 25, recognizing something is repeating here. If it's repeating, it's about you. End of story. And so how do you do that? How do you work with that and take that back? You're repulsed by that. You know, you can be in a position of seeing something in somebody else and saying, "I am not like that." Well, you are.
Now, what happens if this is just, and this may be another conversation for another day, but what happens if your partner is the one that is projecting onto you? And, you know, then that causes you pain and you anguish, and then you start projecting back onto them and it becomes this giant ball of monsterhood. How would you deal with that? How would you even begin to deal with that?
It is a revolving door. When I was married, that's exactly what we were doing. I left after 7 years, 7 year itch. I was gone because he was everything I wasn't, but I was everything he wasn't. And not every relationship can stay together if there's no bridge to meeting each other. If there's no bridge to meeting each other and they will not communicate with you, if you cannot communicate on this deep of a level, are you really in a relationship or is it a convenience? I mean, I talk about that in my book. Is it a convenient situation or is it somebody who's helping you grow? Because a person who is willing to grow with you is going to meet you halfway. They're going to come towards you the other half of the way. And that's the only answer is to communicate. This is the seventh house is an air house. We have to communicate with our partners. And I had a business partner, Trish, who would not communicate. And I tell the story in my book, but I sat her down. I sat her down at the table and I said, "I love you. And I know you're angry with me. Will you please start writing it down when you're mad? Because I can feel it. I want to know. I love you and I want to know what's upsetting you. How can I change if you don't tell me? And vice versa, how can you change if I don't communicate with you?" So we have to communicate with each other. And it took us a year. It was not easy, but we did it. We had so many trines and harmonies because she was an Aquarian and I have Aquarius on the seventh house cusp. And so I had to learn to be more like her and she needed to learn to be more like me. It was very, very interesting how the shadow dance occurred and then we processed through it. It took us
a year. So how does that work as a process of projection then? So you were projecting your own need out onto her to become more Aquarian? Is that kind of what you're saying?
She was Aquarius rising, Aquarius in the first house with with Leo on the seventh house. I had Leo rising. So we were flip-flop and we had flip-flop nodes. Her south node was Aquarius. Her south node was Aquarius. My south node was Leo. How's that?
Fated to come and talk into contact with one another.
Not only were we fated, her mother was a Leo and my father was a Leo, born the same day, the same year.
Well, I'd say you guys had some things to work out.
I tell that story in the book because it is very dramatic about how astrology will show you that the people that you are attracting into your life, there's no accident. Absolutely none. not one accident. If you'll go back into all your partners, the people you divorced, the people you left, and do this shadow work, you will discover parts of you that you didn't even know that you need, that you actually need.
Wow. Yeah. So I would love to sit here and chat with you forever, but we're already 5 minutes to nine, my time anyway. Rebecca, thank you so much. So for those of you who would like to learn more, you can go to Rebecca's website.
It's shadowdance.com.
And or go to her Facebook page on Friday at noon Central Time.
Astrology, Shadow, and Seventh House.
Yes, and find out more.
And on there is the Zoom ID for Jungian Church at Home on Sundays.
As well. Okay, awesome. Rebecca, thank you so much for taking the time today to come and share that with us. How appropriate is it to have that on a day when Venus moves into the next phase? And she is all about these relationships and maturing. This is stuff I can't make up timing-wise. You and I talked about this on Monday. I hadn't even gone in yet and looked at what was going on with Venus. And there were the words, maturing our relationships by working on our own shadows. I went, wow.
Synchronicity. And let me say one last thing before we get off of here, which is what I'd like to talk about on Friday, actually.
Uh-huh.
Synchronicity therefore means the simultaneous occurrence of a certain psychic state with one or more external events which appear as meaningful parallels to the momentary subjective state, and in certain cases, vice versa. That is Carl Jung's synchronicity, and this is the book, Synchronicity. Oh, that is his description of synchronicity. And how about this? I did not know you were going to say any of that. And I pulled this out because this is what I would like to talk about on Friday. And I just had it sitting there, so thought I'd share.
I'm going to go to a quick look on Facebook page and see if there are questions that people have. Kamal Shah says, thank you, Rebecca. Love from Pakistan. Mimi, ease and grace all around. Debbie Hedden says, thank you. Amy Moore, smiley face. And still cannot see everybody's comments. That is so annoying. But I'm assuming if anybody...
I'll tell you how you can see everybody's comments, because I discovered it myself this week. Click on her picture. Click on Facebook. Just click on her picture and you will see the whole chat on the right side. I discovered that watching her last week.
Okay, but whose picture am I going to click on?
I'm talking about the person out there who wants to see the whole chat. Are you talking about yourself?
Yeah, I can't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I thought other people couldn't see the chat. No. I'm telling all of you all out there how you can see the chat. Like if you're on Facebook, just click on her picture and you can see the chat on the right side. I have found out that Facebook won't allow you to see the whole chat.
Yeah.
They
it's
won't.
It's crazy, but that's fine. Whatever. I go back later and I write in.
What we need to ask is if Zoom can be simultaneously on Facebook and YouTube, because YouTube would allow you to see the chat.
I don't think they can, but I've been thinking about changing over to YouTube rather than Facebook because I'm sick and tired of the algorithms changing every freaking week.
You could, and I think it would be a good idea too, for myself, but I need to make people know that I'm actually out there. I'm here, I'm doing this, and so Facebook is my platform at the moment.
Yeah, me too. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you all have a wonderful day. Don't forget, this afternoon at 4 p.m. Pacific time, I will be on Angel Heart Radio discussing the coronavirus and the markers that we see in astrology for it. That, again, is 4 p.m. Pacific time on the Angel Heart Radio Facebook page. We now do the radio show like we are sitting here talking with Rebecca today. So it's kind of fun as we see technology moving ahead. And I will see you all tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Pacific time. Thank you so much, Rebecca. Everybody, take care and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye for now.